Dayton, and welcome to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. I'm Lance Kenmore. You can contact me anytime direct on my cell phone at 509-727-8977 or visit us on the web at kenmoreteam.com. Once again, I always like to thank John for hosting and everybody here at the station for working to make the show happen. John, how you doing?
Wouldn't want to be a weatherman.
No, it is definitely supposed to be a frosty one tonight.
You're running the gamut.
Yes.
Showing people homes. Okay, bring a parka, bring shorts, bring an umbrella.
No, we just, now if I can time those cycles perfectly, so sell 5 houses while the weather's really good, do all the paperwork while it snows, and sleep, and then have another week. But it has been a little crazy for sure. I thought we had the last of it, but I guess maybe this weekend we'll get through it. So,
you know, I'm loving seeing all the snow coming up in the mountains right now. I was worried that everything was going to be dry, snowpack level was going to be down, but yeah. It's looking better.
You know that drought. That part is a lot better. In fact, we went last Wednesday. We had to go over Snoqualmie and make a quick run over to Olympia, and it was the most snow I had seen all year up there. And it was nice to maybe give some of those junior water right holders a little breathe a little easier that there's going to be some water left. So we definitely do like to see that, and it is but. It has still been a very robust real estate market. I mean, things are still moving very well. We've got a lot of clients that have gotten pre-approved recently, and a lot of people that are out looking, and a lot of contracts still going together. So we're just having a great start to the year. And once again, we'd like to thank our host last weekend, Jeff Losey, for being on the show and talking about the home show. And Tom, you had a good event out there. Give us a little recap of how things went.
Yeah, you know, it's always great to go to the home show, not only to see all the past clients, but to meet people who are in the market for new homes. And, you know, it's just kind of fun to sit down and talk to people, and everyone's situation's different. And then once you start digging in the memory bank, you realize how much knowledge you've accumulated over 10 years, because there's rules for everything, it seems like. And so it's fun digging all that info out and helping and meeting a lot of new people.
Okay, that sounds great, and definitely a great show, and thanks again to the HBA for working to make that happen. Before we kind of jump into our topic this week, we always like to start with our crazy celebrity real estate story, and this one is media magnate Rupert Murdoch lost his $44 million Fifth Avenue penthouse in his divorce.
Shucks.
So he's decided to buy himself an even bigger, pricier pad. According to the Wall Street Journal recently, the 82-year-old businessman is under contract to buy not one, but the top 4 floors of One Madison, a 60-floor tower down there.
Days have been good lately for Fox.
Yes.
So when you're pulling the kind of numbers that they are on TV and the radio.
Apparently things have been okay, so that you have the ability to pay $57 million for the downtown condo. He bought floors 57 to 60 of the glass skyscraper for a total of approximately 10,000 square feet. So combining two different units. So we always try to, if I possibly can, I try to relate this back to a situation that we might have here in Tri-Cities. And the only way I could do that this week is I have seen some prime real estate lots where people have taken a location and they've bought 2 older houses and then built 1 new bigger house, for instance, on the river lots. And I've seen it done also on a golf course where people then take and they take the 2 older houses, basically bulldoze them down, and then rebuild maybe like a detached shop and living quarters along with 1 bigger house. So we do see parcels sometimes combined around here, not to the level of $57 million. But we do see that happen on a smaller scale here. So one of the things that I wanted to talk about this week, we've been kind of heavy on concentrated on sellers and what they can do to get ready in the spring market, and we've been working with a lot of those sellers right now looking and evaluating their houses. But with interest rates still being really low, coming into a spring market where there's going to be more inventory for buyers to look at, one of the things I really wanted to talk about is some mistakes that you can avoid when finding the house to buy, and then a little bit about the negotiation process and kind of the art of that negotiation in real estate. And so the first thing that I always get into is what a client is actually trying to accomplish. So generally, we kind of approach things two different ways. When we work with an investor, they will say, here's my numbers, here's my cash flow, and this is exactly what I want things to look like. You need to find me a house within those parameters. At that point, a lot of times the numbers matter more than the house matters. What we have a lot of times happen is people approach a personal purchase many times with an investment mindset where they're like, you know what, I only want to get a good deal. I only want it to be a good deal, as opposed to, here are the five or six requirements that I have. Okay, and then once you meet those requirements, I'm going to pay closer to market. So you really have to establish, I mean, nobody wants to overpay, but you really have to establish the overriding parameters. Is it the school district? Is it the number of bedrooms? Is it the garage? Is it the lot size? Or is it that you just want to get a good deal?
Lance, I've got a question for you. So I got
to buy a car that way?
right, exactly.
So I've been seeing it lately where I feel like clients watch TV and they see these real estate shows and they see them talking down the seller $60,000 and they think that's realistic here in this market. And then they put offer after offer after offer on houses, and they call me and they're just down and out. Oh, we can't find a house. They're not even countering our offers. They're just rejecting them.
They're laughing at us.
Well, I'm so glad you brought that up, Tom, because I had some notes that I wrote down for the show. And one of the bullet points that I wrote down is, how many hours of HGTV have you watched? And so that was one of my bullet points. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to talk about this for the show today, because if the overriding concern is to get that house that you found that meets all that criteria, that's a very different process than I'll only want to get a house that's 15% below market. So I'm so glad you brought that up, because that's part of the things that we have to talk about and approach. And there's a couple things at play there. Number one, and I'm going to mention a couple things about those TV shows. Number one is, I see things that happen during those TV shows that in my mind violate agency law again and again and again. If I did some of those things that happen in those shows, my license would be taken away.
Hear that, folks?
So there's some of the things that happen in that show, in those shows, that is just, I mean, it is cringeworthy. I mean, to me, because, you know, and there have been actually instances where those agents in those shows have been investigated by their Department of Licensing in their states, because there's just some bad things that happen. And in the state of Washington, there's some things that happen that violate agency law. So number one is, we've got to realize, too, that that is a TV show.
Entertainment
portions of those are very scripted. I also have had the privilege of talking with two or three of the couples that have been featured in those shows for the houses that they bought. And I don't want to completely let some things out of the bags, but there's been indications to me that maybe they actually didn't buy some of those houses. And they might have been scripted. So there's a lot going on with those shows. It's great, and I even watched some of them too, because I find personal humor in the fact that we can't do those things. So
it's a clown show.
So it's very good. But one of those things that happens is we have to really, and real estate's local. Those are different markets than we're in. And, you know, a lot of times those are, you know, $700,000-$900,000 houses. And you don't always remember that when you look at that. So it's perspective. It's what we want to find for you. I mean, our job, you know, is to definitely get you into a house, especially when we're representing a buyer, and get it for the lowest possible amount we can get it for and still represent your interest. But a lot of times that interest is wanting that house at market value and making sure they get it versus somebody else. So we're going to go over a little bit of those strategies. And you brought up another huge point in there, and that is a lot of times they're just rejecting our offer and not even countering. And so I really put down there, if you want to, you should structure the offer for acceptance. You really need to look at the pros and cons there and structure the offer for acceptance. And this is true even in a strong buyer's market. A good buyer's agent will work with you and coach you with what might be possible. And I really goes back. We're going to kind of step back here, and we're going to kind of turn the show at this point over to Tom, because the biggest thing that we see happening is, and it's the number one question, is who are these people pre-approved with? Who have they talked to? Do they really have the money? Have they checked their credit? So our sellers are very savvy with that fact. And a lot of times you can get away with maybe making a lower offer and expecting a counter if you have a really strong pre-approval letter. Now, if you don't, and you also want to write drastically below the market price, then you can almost guarantee a rejection. So let's talk to Tom. Step number one that I wanted to talk about, and it's really for him to talk about, is how ready are you to buy that house when you find it that night? And that really comes down to, Tom, what have you done to get people ready for that?
Well, a lot of people, Lance, you probably know this, they get into the market and they don't even know where to start. Well, the answer is simple. It's just get pre-approved. So, Lance, what's the first question you ask someone when they say, I want to go look at a house?
I ask them, which lender are you working with?
Simple as that. It's the first step. Get pre-approved. You want to get that out of the way.
Not only do you want to know my second question?
Yes, I do.
Is that lender local? because I want to know, have they eyeball to eyeball met with somebody local that's going to have to answer the tough questions if they really aren't pre-approved? Versus just plugging maybe fictitious numbers into a calculator that spits out a nationwide pre-approval, type thing. So.
You know, I hate to even say this, but this really did happen here recently where a client was wanting to make an offer at a house, and I didn't have everything I needed to feel comfortable issuing an approval letter yet. And I was literally asked, or told, basically, that, those pre-approval letters don't really mean much. Can we just get one so we can write the offer?
Oh,
that's,
man.
That's literally what I heard.
Ooh.
Yeah, just tough.
It's really tough.
And maybe some lenders, national, or if you go outside of the local market, would be willing to do that, but it's certainly not what we do. So,
like, right. Which ones you see popping up on
you're here in Tri-Cities, and the rest of the world operates on 7 degrees of separation, and Tri-Cities operates on 2 degrees of separation.
Mm-hmm.
that's going to get out if that happens.
Oh, yeah.
I know you're not willing to do that. It's one of the reasons we work with you.
Well, not only is it important for the buyers to know they're pre-approved and what they're approved for, but it's important for the real estate agents involved and the perspective of the sellers of the home. Getting pre-approved lets the person know exactly what to expect, so there's no surprises when they do find that perfect home. So I wrote down a few reasons to get pre-approved, or reasons why you want to get pre-approved as soon as you consider purchasing a home. So even if that's 6 months out, you do want to get pre-approved now. The number one reason I wrote down is that you want to make sure there aren't any surprises on your credit. Maybe there's something that you had paid off years ago. However, it's still showing a balance in the credit report, which could be hurting your score. If you get pre-approved a month before you actually want to buy, we now have time to address those issues and get that account updated. Or maybe there's just some sort of derogatory credit you didn't even know you had. Again, by having you pull your credit, we can get these items addressed now versus when you're writing a contract on a house. Or lastly, maybe your credit score isn't quite where we'd like to see it. Quite often when I pull someone's credit, there's some pointers I can give them to work on it and get their credit scores up in a short period of time. It's this shouldn't be a secret, but the higher your credit scores are, the better the financing terms will be. So
right.
I even have a program where I can input scenarios like, if I pay X card down by $500, what will my scores be? This allows us to find the biggest bang for the buck in terms of getting credit scores course, with their osmol levels in the quickest amount of time. Now, the second reason you want to get pre-approved early is to have time to prepare. We do have a few zero-down loans, and while they're good options for a lot of people, it's quite often you'll be better off by coming up with a down payment of at least 5%. By getting pre-approved early, you can find out early in the process how much of a down payment will be required to get you the optional loan program. If saving a few extra $1,000 saves you $150 a month, it's a no-brainer to do everything you can to make that happen. Now, maybe that those funds comes from 401k, or maybe you take some overtime and work some extra shifts at your work, or maybe you talk to a relative to get a gift. But getting this process done early allows you to make those arrangements to come up with some money for a down payment. Now, the third and final reason I wrote down to get pre-approved early is know what to expect. Most people have an idea of how much of a monthly payment am I comfortable with, but a lot of times that doesn't correlate with the amount of a home they're looking for. So by getting pre-approved and seeing what programs are available to you, we're able to give you a realistic idea of what to expect for a monthly payment at a given sales price. And this lets you know what sales price of home you should be looking at.
Very good information.
I understood that.
You understood that, McKay.
Wow.
That's what we like. We know we've written a good show when you're happy about it. So that really is, I mean, folks, those are great, great tips, and that really is the starting block for getting your offer accepted. And a lot of people really minimize the importance of that. The big thing about that is the industry standard for communicating with the flag, waving the flag in front of the seller's face that I have money, I can pay, here I am.
Mm-hmm.
Most people, a lot of people come in with the approach, they're like, I have the money. Well, you know you have the money, but the seller doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the tool we use to communicate that, because the sellers, they don't believe us, even if we know you have money, even if we've, you know, even if you're one of a family member that I know really well, then it's even more important, you know, to know and communicate that yes, we have the money and we're ready to go. So, weekly I present offers both ways, and the ones with those letters always go better. So if you are looking for a counter offer instead of a rejection, number one, we're going to start with that pre-approval letter, and then number two, we're going to look at what goals you are trying to accomplish. When we come back after the break, we're going to talk a little bit more about what you need to know to get your offer accepted and prevent a rejection.
Right here on News Talk 870.
Welcome back to the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We've been talking about buyers and how you can increase the likelihood of getting your offer accepted. We're always weighing a couple things in there. What do you believe the market price is? What is the seller set as their list price? And where do you want to end up on that property? And so one of the reasons this came up is Tom kind of hit the nail on the head when he said earlier he had a lot of clients that get real discouraged and say, gosh, we're not even getting counter offers. And we thought we were, you know, we thought we were close and we thought we were in the game. So we've done a couple things, and there's a couple tips that I want to give to buyers out there that are looking and that are helpful, because a lot of times they find that property that meets their needs, but it might be overpriced. It could be. Maybe the seller set the price was using emotional decisions or upgrades we've talked on the show that don't mm-hmm. quite get their full value back. For whatever the reason could be, maybe the seller set the price outside of the market. And what can you do as a buyer? We have always the traditional, just in our industry, called the lowball offer. and that is really, as we refer to it. But in many times people say, you know, that I'm just looking for the best possible deal. So they write 25 lowball offers and maybe one sticks. However, a lot of times people have those other factors at play. Is this is the property I really want?
Now, there's things you can do to write a lowball offer that might increase your chances of getting a counteroffer. We talked about the pre-approval letter to start with. The second thing that comes to mind is a good agent is going to talk to the seller's agent and say to that agent, what goals is your seller trying to accomplish? Where is your seller trying to move? Are they building a new house? Do they need some extra time in this house? Are they downsizing? You know, so there can be some factors. If you can speak with the other agent, have your buyer's agent talk to the other agent, you can kind of start to figure out some motivation and what's important on the other side of the transaction. Once you know that, you can tailor your offer a little better for the chance of being accepted. Another thing that you can do is use data in your negotiations. A lot of times you could just throw an offer out and say, you know what, here's our offer because that's what we're willing to pay. But a good agent has gone through with the buyer, and the buyer and that agent have sat down and done what I just call a reverse market analysis, where the buyer's agent has said, okay, if I was pricing this home to sell, here's how I would price it, here's the comparable properties that I would use, and then presenting that data to the seller with your offer. So you can go through and say, look, there's, you know, I really appreciate the fact that you're priced at $200,000, but we have found three sales in the last 30 days that have all sold and closed at $192,000. And so we have come in and we have offered $192,000 because these three sales have sold. That is a much different offer than just writing down a 7-page offer with no pre-approval letter for $192,000.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you, that second offer is not going to get a counteroffer. It's probably just going to get one of those rejections that you thought about. No thanks. But if you had the pre-approval letter, you had the data with the offer, and you've presented that data and that reasoning with the offer to the seller and the seller's agent, you're going to increase the likelihood of getting that offer accepted.
Lance, question for you. In your experience, what's the average a buyer can expect to talk down a seller?
Okay, so that's a great question. If you look at, and I'm glad you said average, if you look at our entire market, so 3,000, over 3,000 sales last year, that percentage was roughly sold price to list price was right at about 97%. So the average for the entire market was
3%.
Within 3% of list price. And that's because a lot of agents, you know, are helping price those homes and put those homes on the market. So an agent knows a lot of agents aren't going to take drastically overpriced listings because if they do, they're going to waste a lot of money, eventually go out of business because nothing they list ever sells.
Right.
You know, so there, you don't find a ton of people throwing a lot of marketing and expense dollars at an overpriced listing. And that's one reason that kind of keeps that market where it's at. So we're looking at, now the real statistic comes into play when you start to look at houses that have sold in 60 days or less. That number starts to go up from 97% to 98%. And the closer you get to the days on the market, it kind of makes sense. You know, the better deals are going to sell faster.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But 3% is the average over the entire market. And so that is also a good indication because a lot of times, and I think it comes from HGTV, or I'm not sure if it's just a lot of times people say 10%. You know, you hear that thrown around a lot. Well, my grandpa always told me 10%. You know, if you're not offering 10% less, then you're not making you're not making a good offer. And so, you know, we do hear that a lot, and then it's just a matter of saying, is this a house you really want, or are we trying to, or are we only looking for houses we're going to get less than 10%? So structuring that offer for acceptance is huge. Another factor that comes into play that I always tell people and encourage people to do is I do say this is a highly emotional transaction. And if it wasn't for emotions, and that excites me. That excites me every day when I wake up, because if emotions weren't involved, Tom, I'm out of business.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my job is to help remove those emotions. If every buyer and seller could be non-emotional, then Lance Kenmore's out of business.
I mean, so,
that's one of the benefits of having an intermediary like that to help point these things out and look at it. So one of the things that we come up with and that we're always trying to do is create a counteroffer. Even when I've gotten those lowball offers, I'm counseling with the seller and saying, okay, here's your goal. Is your goal to get this sold in this minute, in this number of months? And a lot of times that is not surmountable. They're so offended that you're just not going to get the counteroffer. And that's 100% a personal choice. And so that's why a lot of times you don't. But a lot of, I've had amazing gaps closed by counteroffers. You know, I've had, you know, $200,000 houses, $50,000 low offers, which normally would just be burned up. But we've countered those before. I've had a $200,000 house and I've had a $150,000 offer that we've countered at $189,000, and we've put those deals together.
Mm.
I mean, can you imagine that gap, you know? And the seller was, I remember, you know, over the years, the seller's always shocked, like, gosh, Lance, I wasn't even going to counter. I was totally offended. And then you're just taking that ball and you're putting it back in the court of the buyer.
Mm-hmm.
But I've had that big of gaps and even larger surmounted and come together. So we're always encouraging a counteroffer. Let's take the emotions out. Let's put a counteroffer that works for you back in the other court. And then if it works for them, we're going to find out pretty quick. So that counteroffer structuring, always trying to structure a counteroffer, if that meets your goals, is one of the biggest things that we're trying to do. And Tom, I know there's some other things that you look at on your side of the table also that you're working on.
Yeah, so we talked before the break about why you want to get pre-approved early so you know what to expect. Then I wanted to go over what do we look at in this pre-approval? What gets you pre-approved? So as you can imagine, the most important thing we look at is credit history. A credit report is our only gauge in determining how likely someone is to repay us. Look at it like this. A complete stranger walks up to you and asks you to borrow $10,000. In return, they tell you they'll pay you back in 5 years with interest of 5%. If you know they have a history of not paying people back, you probably won't lend them the money. All right?
You're right.
Yep. You go to a lender, you're a complete stranger. So you got to look at it that way. However, if these people have a long history of always making their payments on time, on the agreed to terms, you'd be more apt to lend them the money. Lenders look at it the same way, and a credit report is our only tool for making that judgment. Now, the second thing that's most important we look at is the client's employment history and their income. We want to see someone who can hold a steady job with steady income. We can't predict future earnings of a client, but we can look into the past and see what kind of income have they been bringing in and how consistent it is. And it gives us reasonable expectations for future earnings. Now, we look at what's called debt to income. It's very important. We'll look at their total credit expenses of the client, meaning their credit card payments, installment payments, prospective new mortgage payments. And we want that to be no more than 45% of their gross monthly income. There are some programs that allow you to go higher than that, but 45% is a good standard to go by. Now, the last thing we want to see is the assets of a client. How much they have saved up for a down payment. If the client has been able to save up for their down payment in addition to their current living expenses, that shows us they have a budget they follow, and it makes us feel a lot more comfortable they'll be able to repay the loan. On the other side, do they frequently overdraft their bank account? Do they have nothing in savings? And they're overdraft every other month. This is a potential red flag that they're having issues with their current living expenses, and maybe adding a mortgage into the mix isn't the greatest thing. So those are the three main categories we look at: credit history, employment, assets. I'd love to talk to you about getting pre-approved. And even if this is a ways down the road for you and you just want to make sure you have all your bases covered, it's not a bad idea to get that out of the way. You can visit my website at tomcoinhomeloans.com or feel free to call me anytime, 783-7300.
Perfect. Great information, Tom. The last thing I want to fit in as we finish up here, and that is timing is always a critical element of a good offer. And that's why people pay attention to number of days on the market, time of year, if somebody has just moved out of a house or vacated a house. Timing can play a critical, critical role. On a $200,000 property, you know, I've seen offers that had to be $200,000 to get it done. I've also seen offers where you never know what's going on in somebody's life or what's happened or an event that's happened. I've also seen properties that said they would never sell sell for a penny less than $200 and they've sold for $185, you know, 3 weeks later. So you never know what elements are happening, and knowing the factors that affect that timing are a big, big deal. So I always, as kind of a last summary of things there, is timing in your offer can be a huge, huge deal. I mean, we've seen deals go together at 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning. That does not give time always for our system to be updated. And I've seen a house that's been on the market for 3 months. And at 10 o'clock in the morning, we finalize a deal that we got, you know, Friday night. And, you know, Saturday morning, 10 o'clock, we finalize a deal. And another offer comes in at 3. But they didn't call to see if we were working on any offers. And they said, oh, no, the house has been on the market 3 months. There's no way there's no other offers going on it. And they, I've gotten that call so many times, we just... you know, we're waiting for one initial, and they're always like, I can't believe it. So timing is critical in real estate for sure. A lot of factors that go into writing an offer that can get you the best possible value but still have a chance of being accepted. So we will be right back here next week. We are pumping out the real estate transactions right now. It might not feel like it tonight, but I rest assured the real estate spring market is here, and we'll be right back next weekend
here on News Talk 870.